trip to Bridgeport didn't take long at all, and before he knew it, Riley was riding in an SUV heading towards the warehouse. Despite their urgency, they kept their speed down to just over the legal limit, not wanting to call attention to themselves. Even so, it took them less than 10 minutes to reach their objective. The gates to the property were chained shut, but as the SUVs came around the corner at the end of the street, the Templar who had been watching the complex on their behalf stepped out of the shadows with bolt cutters in hand and quickly took care of the problem. He hauled the gate open on rusted wheels. Riley raced over to the office door along the side of the warehouse, ignoring the larger loading bay doors that were directly ahead of him, knowing that the former would be much easier to breach. Martinez was to his right, carrying the breaching ram, while to his left and slightly behind him were Ortega and Simmons. Behind them came First Squad, led by Sergeant Stevens. Confident that his men knew what they were doing, Riley kept his focus on the task before him. Gun in one hand, flashlight in the other, he waited to the side while Martinez employed the breaching ram. Then Riley was the first through the door, his light swiveling left to right and back again as he took in his immediate surroundings and searched for threats. Behind him, the others followed suit. The warehouse was huge, a good 3 stories high and probably 200 feet in length. The front of the building was to his immediate right and included 2 large loading dock-style doors, both currently closed and chained shut on the outside. No one was coming in that way to bother them without giving away their location, so Riley turned his attention to the rest of the warehouse. The main portion of the warehouse stretched out to his left and was filled with massive steel shipping containers, the kind you would see aboard an ocean freighter. They were arranged into 3 rows. Each row was 3 containers wide, 4 containers high, and stretched an unknown distance into the dark depths of the warehouse, creating 2 lanes in which to walk between. Using hand signals, Riley indicated that he and his men would take the left lane while First Squad would take the right. As they moved deeper into the warehouse, Riley kept waiting for the Necromancer's followers to erupt out of the shipping containers where they were hiding and fall on his team, but the doors around them remained sealed firmly shut. Still, something about the place felt wrong. Riley could feel it at the base of his spine and in the uneasy tightening of his gut. He kept wanting to turn around and head back the way he had come before he found whatever it was waiting for him ahead. Make no mistake, there was something waiting. Of that, he was certain. He counted 20 containers stacked lengthwise end to end before he was able to get a glimpse of the end. And something else, too. Light. It was spilling into the aisle from a larger open space at the end of the row. As he reached the end, he caught movement to the right out of the corner of his eye, but it was only Sergeant Stevens and his squad emerging from the other aisle. Together, they surveyed the scene in front of them. The final third of the warehouse stretched out before them, free of the shipping containers that had filled the building to this point. Instead, it held the bodies of 5 men. A large casting circle had been drawn on the floor with what looked from this distance to be salt. Inside the circle was a strange hermeneutical symbol that Riley didn't recognize, also etched in salt. Extending outward from the circle were 4 bodies, arranged in a position reminiscent of the Vitruvian Man by Leonardo da Vinci, with their feet closest to the casting circle and their heads pointing away from it toward the Templars. Blood could be seen pooling beneath and around each of the bodies. But what really drew Riley's attention were the 2 portable spotlights set up at the back of the room, shining on the metal framework that was the focal point beyond the casting circle. Suspended in the framework, his arms and legs also stretched wide, was the corpse of a naked man. Even from here, Riley could see that the man had been tortured, for his body was covered in 1,000 different cuts going every which way across his flesh, his skin a canvas painted in blood. The grotesque scene drew your attention automatically, whether you wanted to look or not, and Riley knew that it had been intentionally designed that way. With all of them staring forward in shock, their enemies would have the perfect opportunity to strike. Riley raised a hand, index finger pointed skyward, and spun it around in a quick circle. The 2 groups became 1, their backs to each other as they formed into a tight circle, their weapons pointed outward, covering both the tops of the shipping containers that were now at their backs and the area at the front of the warehouse, lost in darkness beyond the bright wash of the portable floodlights. Riley braced for an attack, knowing that this is exactly when he would have ordered his own people out of hiding if their positions had been reversed. But none came. They moved forward, skirting the gruesome tableau in front of them, and made sure there wasn't anyone waiting to ambush them in the darkness beyond the portable spotlights. Then, and only then, when he was certain they were alone, did Riley give the signal to stand down. There were still dozens of shipping containers to check, and check they would, each and every one of them. but Riley could already tell that they were the only ones here. At some point, their target had flown the coop and seemingly had done so right under their watchers' noses. For the second time since the hunt for Logan had begun, Riley got the sense that he was in over his head. It was just after 8 o'clock that evening. Cade was in his workshop, fighting his way through a new tome he had acquired just that week, searching, as he did most nights, for some clue as to how he might return Gabrielle to her former self. So far, he hadn't had any luck. But that didn't mean the answer wasn't out there. Perhaps on the very next page. Cade didn't receive many calls. When it came to the few he did receive, most callers hung up when he didn't answer after 5 or 6 rings. But this time, when the phone rang, a possible record 14th time, Cade knew who it was.
Why do I have the feeling this isn't a social call?
Because you're psychic, that's why. Isn't that why they ran you out of the order?
Very funny. They wish it were that simple.
There was a pregnant pause on the other end of the line.
Well, nice chatting with you, but I've got
Sorry, man. Just trying to figure out if I really want to pull you back into this mess.
You wouldn't have called if you didn't need something. And I'll be the judge of whether or not I get involved, okay? Out with it.
The necromancer's escaped.
So I heard.
We tracked him to Bridgeport, to an old warehouse down by the harbor.
Cade frowned. Bridgeport wasn't more than 20 minutes from where he now stood. What was the necromancer doing out there?
He performed some kind of a ritual, I guess you'd call it. Like nothing I've ever seen before. Near as we can tell, he split as soon as he was finished, and I suspect he's long gone by now, but the power that's still lingering here feels dangerous as hell. I was hoping I might convince you to come take a look.
Cade didn't say anything, just let the silence linger as he thought it through. The order had forced him out, and truth be told, that didn't make him all that inclined to help them now. Yes, he'd disobeyed a direct order, but he'd believed at the time, and still did today, that the order had been illegal. In disobeying it, he had saved not just a valued member of the order, but quite possibly society as they knew it. Rather than acknowledge that the end result of his actions had been for the betterment of all concerned, the powers that be had decided to assuage the preceptor's bruised ego. Those were not the kind of men Cade wanted to work for. But, and here's where things got sticky, it wasn't the order that was asking. Or at least not after he sent their mealy-mouthed messengers packing. No, this was Riley, a man who had literally gone to hell and back with him just because he'd been asked. He couldn't send his friend away empty-handed. Cade weighed Riley's request against the security he had set up on the property to protect Gabrielle during the times when he had to go out. The wards were extremely powerful. He'd certainly paid enough for them to be, and he was confident they would stand up to even a determined attack. If Logan had just performed a major working, there was no way he would have enough energy left over to breach the barrier.
Besides, Riley says he's long gone, and I would be too if I knew the order was tracking me. Bridgeport, you said?
Yeah, by the harbor. I'll send a car for you.
No, don't do that. I'll catch a cab, and you can give me a lift back yourself when we're done. Fair enough?
That's how you want to play it.
I do. Give me the address.
Cade had the cab drop him off about a half mile from the address Riley had given him. After 10 minutes of walking, he reached the warehouse. The gate to the property was open, and he could see 3 black SUVs pulled up inside the yard, facing the entrance to the building. As he drew closer, a shadow detached itself from the side of the building.
Here goes the neighborhood!
Who are you kidding? Property values fell into the toilet the minute you stepped out of your truck.
The two men came together and embraced. They were opposites, in a way. Riley was tall and muscular, where Cade was average height and wiry. Cade was white, with a head full of hair, where Riley had shaved his skull several years ago and was dark. Despite their physical differences, they had a lot in common intellectually and spiritually. Cade was genuinely glad to see his friend and former teammate. It had been a while.
Here, you told the preceptor to put it where the sun don't shine.
Yeah, he's lucky I didn't show up to deliver the message in person.
Wouldn't that have been a sight? Can't imagine why he thought you'd just drop everything and come running back to help out, but I'm glad you're here now.
I'm here to take a look around and give you some advice. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less.
Right.
Cade turned and looked at the building a few feet away. It didn't look like much, just an old warehouse. Then again, true evil never did look the way you expected it to look. In some ways, that was a sure sign of its power, to blend in with everything around it and hide from scrutiny until it had spread like a cancer through the space around it. Cade noticed that Riley was making an effort to look everywhere but at the building, and alarm bells went off in his head.
Something I should know about?
I don't know. Something just doesn't feel right.
We're talking about the necromancer. Of course it doesn't feel right.
It's not that. The whole thing just feels staged. Like I'm missing something obvious and it's going to come back and bite me in the ass. You ever get that feeling? I mean, I've been in places where the necromancer has used his particular brand of magic, and it always leaves a certain residue in the air, a greasy feeling that just kind of hangs about. Some of it's him, some of it's the nature of the magic he uses, but whenever he's tried to do something, a ritual or a spell or a working of just about any kind, that feeling is there. That feeling in the air is gone, if it was ever here in the first place. And given what's inside that room, it should be here in spades, but it's not. And that makes me think I'm missing something.
Cade frowned. He trusted Riley, and it wasn't all that often that the big man was wrong. At least not about something important like this. Now more than ever, he wanted to see inside the warehouse.
Still not going to give me any specifics, huh?
I've done enough already to prejudice your opinion. No sense making it any worse. There are several bodies and a fair bit of blood, but that's all I'm going to say for now. We can talk more once you've had a chance to take a look.
All right. Let's do this then.
Riley led Cade into the warehouse and passed the shipping containers toward the rear of the building. When they reached the bodies, Riley stepped to one side, out of the way, so that Cade could do what he'd come to do. He began by standing and looking out over the scene, trying to get a feel for the ritual in general. While he didn't think of himself as an expert on mystical rites and black magic, he did have a fair amount of experience with them, both as a result of being the Echo Team commander for so many years, as well as his general research into the subject while tracking the enemies of the Order. The fact that blood sacrifices had been made, human sacrifices at that, and more than one, meant that the summoner thought an incredible amount of energy was going to be needed for the rite. Usually this meant the caster was trying to summon something from the infernal realms, anything from a minor demon to a major one. But Cade didn't get the sense that such was the case here. For one, the iconography within the summoning circle was incorrect. Never mind the fact that you didn't use a five-pointed star when trying to call something from the nether regions. Plus, Cade had picked up on the same lack of negative energy that Riley had. He walked over to one of the corpses lying on the floor and squatted down beside it. Cade put the man in his 30s and guessed that he was most likely homeless, given the condition of his clothing and the amount of dirt that was caked under his fingernails. The man's throat had been cut, and the size of the wound made the cause of death pretty obvious. And yet, something wasn't right. Something about the wound in the man's throat. Cade bent closer for a better look. The cut was even and extended all the way across the front of the man's neck, right about where his Adam's apple would be. The cut was very deep. The knife had been extremely sharp and had been applied with force.
Most likely from behind.
Cade stood up, took another look down at the body, and frowned. If the cut had been made from behind, with one swift movement, as appearances seemed to suggest, then blood should have sprayed outward all over the man's clothing as his heart kept beating in an effort to keep him alive. But except for some blood splashed over the neck of his shirt, his clothes were free of it. That wasn't possible. Cade moved over to the next body. Another male, younger this time, probably in his late teens, early 20s. This victim was better dressed. Football jersey, clean blue jeans, shiny white sneakers. The same sort of wound bisected his neck, and, like the first, the lack of blood across his clothing was telling. They were already dead when their throats were cut. Cade knew he was right. Still, he checked the other three bodies arranged around the casting circle just to be certain. In the end, all of them had the same wound and the same damning evidence.
Find something?
In a minute.
Cade had a few more things he wanted to check out, like seeing all this through his sight. Several years ago, Cade had barely survived an encounter with a supernatural entity he'd come to know as the Adversary. The battle had resulted in what he thought had been the death of his wife, Gabrielle, and had left him scarred both physically and emotionally. He'd lost the sight in his right eye, and the flesh on that side of his face had been savagely disfigured, leaving him with a wide band of scar tissue that stretched from the hairline above his eye, down across his cheekbone, and around behind his ear. The eye itself was still intact, but was nothing more than a milky white orb floating in a sea of damaged flesh. He was wearing an eye patch over the scar tissue now, as he habitually did when he was out and about in public, but he knew the patch wouldn't interfere with what he intended to do next. While the damage to his eye had cost him his ability to see in any normal sense of the word, he had gained something unexpected in return. When he moved his ruined eye just so, the supernatural world was revealed to him in all its so-called glory. Nothing could hide from his sight. He could see through the guises of demons and angels alike, as well as anything in between. Mystical power was as obvious to him as a mountain in the middle of a desert plain. For short periods of time, he could even see into the beyond, that mystical world between the lands of the living and those of the dead, if he chose to do so, all without setting foot outside his own plane of reality. Doing so revealed him to the denizens of that realm, however, and since they could be some nasty sons of bitches, he didn't do it all that often. He didn't have to go that far now, though. If there had been a ritual conducted here, especially one powerful enough to require the sacrifice of 6 human beings, it should have left psychic echoes all over the place. He should have no trouble examining them with his sight, and in doing so, would hopefully learn more about the reason for the rite in the first place. Stepping back, Cade closed his eyes for a moment, and then opened them again, moving his damaged eye just so in the process. Much of the spiritual world is driven by emotion, with objects and locations taking on the predominant feelings surrounding them. In a building where human sacrifices had been carried out, Cade expected to see the place crawling with the impact of all the fear, pain, and despair the victims had felt, and was only partially surprised when he didn't see it. The lack of it told him far more than its presence would have. He'd been right, the killings could not have taken place here, but that didn't mean there was nothing to see. Loose, smoke-like tendrils of shifting green-black power connected each of the corpses on the floor to the ritual circle between them, and a larger vein of power connected the circle with the corpse on the frame. Even now, there seemed to be some energy pulsing between them, as if the bodies in front were feeding energy of some kind to the one behind them.
What the hell?
Cade had never seen its like. Along with his sight, the adversary had passed on another unique ability to Cade, one he called his gift. The proper name for it was psychometry, he'd later found out, the ability to divine information about an object or its owner through physical contact. It had been 7 years since the gift was thrust upon him, but in that time, he still had not grown comfortable using it. He wondered if he ever would. It wasn't the loss of tactile sensation that bothered him so much. He'd become accustomed to how things felt through the thin material of the latex gloves he always wore. And it wasn't as if he was unable to touch things at all. When he was at home, safely surrounded by his own possessions, he would often move about the house without his gloves on, doing just that for hours at a time. His home was his sanctuary. No one else was allowed inside in order to limit the psychic latencies that might be left behind. Nor was it the fact that using the psychometry brought a degree of physical danger, for he had never been one to shy away from the possibility of physical injury. On past occasions, he'd emerged from sessions confused, disoriented, at times even uncertain of his own identity. He'd even bitten one of his teammates once, after seeing visions of hungry revenants rampaging about. No, his discomfort lay in the way the gift had come to him. There was little doubt that the adversary meant to kill him on that summer night, and had only failed by the smallest of margins. But something had been left behind, some kind of residue or catalyst that resulted in his gift, his sight. And the nature of their origin would always make him uneasy. Still, he'd be the first to admit that his powers had certainly been helpful over the years in tracking down the supernatural threats and enemies that plagued humankind, which was why he would continue using them for precisely that purpose, like now. He squatted next to the nearest corpse and stripped off the flesh-colored latex glove that covered his right hand. Mentally bracing himself for what was to come, Cade reached out and grasped the hand of the corpse. Darkness. A sense of gentle languidness, like a leaf floating in the water, waiting for what was to come next, whatever that might be. Peace. Acceptance. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to fear. Something cold pressed against his mouth and the edge of a glass bumped his lips.
Drink this. Drink. Now rest. Rest.
Cade pulled his hand away, breaking the connection before following the man's last moments too deeply. It was clear that the victim had not had any idea what was going on in the moments before his death, which made Cade suspect that the victim had been drugged, perhaps even poisoned. There was definitely no doubt that the victim hadn't been conscious, perhaps not even alive for the final coup de grace. Cade stood, pulling his glove back on as he did so.
Well?
He was dead before they slit his throat. My guess is that others were as well.
What's the point of that?
That's just it. There isn't one. You can't use corpses to power a summoning or any other kind of major ritual that I know of. Even a necromancer, especially a necromancer, needs a living sacrifice.
While Riley was thinking that over, Cade turned and looked across the room at the corpse still hanging in the frame. The only corpse with blood cascading across its chest. The one his sight had shown still pulling forth residual power from the bodies in formation around it.
Could that be?
Cade abruptly strode over to the sixth and final corpse. Like all the others, this victim was male and relatively young, but was stripped nude where the others were still dressed. The reason for the difference was obvious, in the hundreds, if not thousands, of slashes cut into his bare flesh. The others might have died peacefully, but this one had died very slowly and had no doubt been aware for much, if not all, of it. A wave of blood had splashed across his chest and dried at some point before their arrival, suggesting that the killing blow had been struck after the victim had been placed on the rack, and not before. The man's head hung forward on his chest, and his long hair obscured his face and neck. Cade reached up and gently pushed the man's head back, wanting to see the wound that had killed him.
Oh.
Riley must have seen Cade's reaction, for he was suddenly there at his side, his HK Mark 23 pistol in hand, pointing at the man on the rack. The Templars knew all too well that just because the target was dead didn't mean that it was no longer dangerous.
I'm good. Just surprised, that's all.
Probably should have warned you about that, huh?
You think? No harm done.
The former Knight Commander reached up and lifted the man's head back up a second time, taking a good look at what awaited him there. Someone had taken a blowtorch to the right side of the man's face, torching his eye socket and the flesh surrounding it in a savage attack that led from the man's eye socket around to behind his ear. Almost subconsciously, Cade reached up and ran his fingers along his own stretch of scar tissue. The necromancer was mocking him. That was the reason for all this. The dead victims, the false ceremony, even the light shining on the dead man in front of him like some kind of museum display. The necromancer had wanted him to find this place, find this body. But why? Cade gently lowered the man's head back down and stepped back, trying to put aside his emotion and view the body dispassionately again. The man was about his height and weight, though younger, and had his face disfigured to match Cade's own. From all appearances, a proxy for Cade himself. He'd been handcuffed to a metal frame that held him suspended and on display, while the light shining upon him illuminated his torture and suffering for all to see. So where had he seen something like this before? It only took him a moment to come up with the answer. Death by a thousand cuts, or death by slow slicing, was an old Chinese method of execution that had been outlawed around the turn of the 20th century. The victim was strung up in a public place, stripped of his clothes, and then cut with a sharp knife until dead. It was a hideous punishment, and one that was reserved for what the Chinese had considered rather severe crimes, such as treason or killing one's own parents. It was also used as a lesson of deterrence for others who might be considering the same. The victim would suffer a long time before dying, and most importantly, would be aware of their pain for most, if not all, of their suffering. Cade didn't like the implications that the tableau spread before him was making. If he was reading the signs correctly, it meant that he was going to suffer harshly and publicly for some sin he had committed against the necromancer in the past. Nor did it take much to figure out what that sin might be. Cade was, after all, instrumental in capturing Logan. If he hadn't done so, then Logan never would have been imprisoned. Was the necromancer threatening to execute him in such a fashion? Was that what this was? A warning of some kind? And what about that weird flow of power between the corpses? What was the story with that? There seemed to be more questions than answers here, and Cade didn't like it. He needed more information. Thankfully, he had a way to get it. Cade stripped his glove off again, tried to find a spot that wasn't covered in blood on the man's body, and was finally forced to select the top of the man's head as the only reasonable place to use. He braced himself for what he was certain would be nearly overwhelming pain, and then reached out and put his hand atop the man's head like a benediction. Darkness. And then more darkness. Complete, utter darkness. Darkness that surrounded him and held him in place as securely as iron shackles and chains. Darkness that he could feel but not see, taste but not touch, like an invisible presence that had swallowed him whole and now refused to let him go free. Darkness like a malignant living thing. Darkness like the rot at the center of the necromancer's soul.
Hello, Cade.
Cade didn't respond.
What's the matter? Demon got your tongue?
Cade tried to pull free, to return to the living world around him, to break the link with the dead that his gift had created, only to find that he no longer had a reference for doing so. How do you push when there's nothing for you to push against? How do you break yourself free when there is nothing and no body with which to do it in the first place?
Did you think we were finished, you and I? Did you think I would forget what you had done?
Cade tried to shout back, only to discover that he couldn't do that either. Shout, that is, for he had no lungs with which to give the statement voice. He was in trouble, and he knew it.
You meddled where you did not belong, Templar, and took from me something of value. Now, I shall do the same in return.
Cade tried to ignore the Necromancer and concentrate on the task before him. He understood now that the power the Necromancer had gathered with his ritual had not been intended to summon anything at all, but had instead been used to build the cage he now found himself in. A cage in which he would remain, lest he marshal the strength necessary to break free. But as he mentally pushed and pulled and did everything he could to find a way free of the metaphysical chains that bound him, he found himself growing weaker, found the chains that held him growing stronger. Slowly, bit by bit, he began to lose himself to the nothingness that surrounded him. He might have stayed there, might have truly fallen victim to the trap that the Necromancer had set for him, if his opponent had been content to leave it at that. Fortunately for Cade, Logan had to gloat, and in doing so gave Cade the key to his prison.
Know this, Templar. While you struggle to escape the prison cell I have constructed for you, I will be taking from you that which you admire most, and I shall not be as lenient as the adversary has been.
The Necromancer's words cut like a knife through Cade's growing confusion. They gave him the focus he needed, the rock upon which to mount his defense, and he gathered the pieces of himself back together. He flung himself back from the precipice. Cade stumbled away from the corpse, his heart sick with fear. He knew what the Necromancer wanted, knew he'd been played for a fool, and if he didn't do something about it quickly, he was likely to regret it for the rest of his life.
Gabby.
With his heart in his throat and fear in his eyes, Cade Williams charged past the bewildered Templars and headed for the door.
Cade, wait!
As Cade rushed out of the warehouse, his gaze fell upon the three SUVs parked in the lot and the soldier from Second Squad who stood near them. Cade didn't waste any time. He just ran to the man's side.
Hey, give me the keys.
What? Why do you want the keys?
Cade bent, searched through the man's pockets, and came out with the keys.
Cade! What are you doing?
The Necromancer stood at the end of the long drive, staring up its length at the little house set back from the road and nestled among the oak trees. Inside that house was the prize he'd come here to claim, the prize he needed in order to carry out the grand plan he had conceived during his last few months in captivity. Without it, he would fail. But with it, he would soon regain what he had lost when the Templars had broken the power of his circle and murdered his followers. All he had to do was seize it. Hours before, he'd traded his prison jumpsuit for comfortable clothes and the long hooded robe that he preferred to wear to keep his disfigured face hidden from view. Now, as he raised his hands and hooded face to the sky above, he looked like some Hollywood version of a medieval monk casting benedictions over his flock.
Dook, siuk, odispo.
The temperature seemed to drop an extra 10 degrees, making the cold night even colder. The Necromancer did not notice the cold, so intent was he on the power he was summoning. On the other side of the veil, something heard his call. The ground in front of the Necromancer suddenly split open, as if a hot knife had been drawn deep through its surface. From out of the door the Necromancer had opened, wraith-like forms began to rise. They hovered in the air in front of their master and waited for him to give the command. Logan did not need to see them directly to know that their faces and bodies would be twisted parodies of the human form. Specters had once been human, after all. Once he was finished with them, he would set them free to wreak further havoc. That should tie up pursuit long enough to let him get away. In a very short time, there were a dozen or so gathered in front of him, waiting for his commands.
Odavro repo! Mulam!
He sent them surging forward toward the house at the end of the drive. The wards protecting Cade's property had been specifically designed to keep out anything with the taint of the unholy, and the specters surging forward across the front lawn certainly fit the bill. For one long moment, the necromancer could actually see the shimmering curtain of power that extended around and over the property, a giant dome of protection erected to safeguard the one who lay within. With his target's position locked firmly in his mind, he was then free to begin his own assault. The specters hit the ward with every bit of power at their disposal, crashing into it with the concentrated force of a warhead. As the strain of continual attacks began to take its toll on the effectiveness of the barrier, the necromancer at last entered the fray. Stepping forward, he drew power from the rift to the netherworld that still loomed open nearby, binding it with his hands into a twisting, turning ball of energy, which he then sent crashing into a point near the base of the ward's outer shell. One moment the ward was intact, shrugging off each attempt to breach its integrity, and in the next, the specters were charging across the lawn, their sinuous wraith-like forms slipping through the darkness with impunity. They smashed through the door and disappeared inside. The necromancer smiled, following in their wake. Riley stared in stunned amazement as the SUV Cade had just stolen shot through the gates, bounced over the curb, and sped off down the street.
Just what the hell is going on?
One moment Cade had been standing there, examining the body of the poor guy strapped onto the torture rack through the use of his gift, and the next he was dashing across the room and disappearing down the street. Riley didn't think he was going to forget the look on Cade's face in the split second after he'd let go of the corpse. Cade had been scared. There was no doubt about that. If Cade was scared, that usually meant Riley should be terrified.
Just what did he see?
Riley headed for one of the other vehicles, intent on chasing his former commander down and demanding an explanation. A spotlight stabbed down, illuminating Riley as he stared upward. It stayed on him for a moment and then moved on, dancing over his men and the entrance to the warehouse before finding and settling on a wide open space about 20 yards away.
What the hell?
Riley put a hand up to shield his eyes and tried to get a look at the chopper itself, hoping it might tell him something about its occupants. He could see that the aircraft now coming in for a landing was an executive helicopter, one painted solidly black. He'd seen that chopper before, was all too familiar with whom it contained. Cade would have to wait. The door of the helicopter slid open. Two men from the Preceptor's personal protection detail stepped out and surveyed the scene, then gave the all clear to Preceptor Johansson, who had been waiting inside the aircraft and now stepped out.
Oh, damn.
Riley went to greet him. Cade sped through the night behind the wheel of the stolen SUV. Every passing second felt like an eternity as he rushed toward his destination, terrified that he would be too late and cursing himself for ever leaving Gabrielle alone in the first place.
What the hell was I thinking? How could I have been so stupid?
His time away from the Order had made him complacent, it seemed, for he had not seen the threat even when it was right there, staring him in the face. He had not been a praying man for some time, and even before that, he'd had what could only be called a rather contentious relationship with the Almighty. But he prayed now, prayed fervently, in fact, desperately asking for assistance from a God he wasn't certain he believed in any longer, but knowing, even as he did so, that he had nowhere else to turn. As he pulled into the driveway of his home in Willow Grove, however, he knew his prayers had been fruitless. The front door, which he had left closed and securely locked behind him when he'd left earlier that evening, was now smashed open and hanging in its frame, supported by a single hinge. Inside, darkness beckoned. His heart was screaming at him to rush into the house and see what had happened to Gabrielle, but he ignored it, knowing that was precisely what the enemy wanted him to do, to rush in blindly and get himself killed. The adversary had tried that once and nearly succeeded. Cade was determined not to fall for that trick a second time. He pulled his pistol out from under his shirt and advanced toward the house, his weapon at the ready. He stepped in through the open doorway and then paused, listening for movement anywhere in the house. He didn't hear anything. He moved through the lower rooms, turning on lights as he went, not wanting to get caught in the dark with the kinds of things that the necromancer had at his beck and call. The living room and foyer led into a formal dining room, and then a kitchen-great room combination with a grand staircase leading to the second floor, where Gabby's room was. Before going up the stairs, Cade stepped over to the fireplace to where a pair of samurai swords hung on a rack. He wanted to be prepared. Guns didn't always work. There were plenty of creatures out there in the dark corners of the world that were only affected by blows delivered with emotion or faith behind them, and that required something a bit more personal. It was the reason why all Templars went into battle with a blade at their side, along with their firearms. This particular weapon wasn't his blessed blade. That was in the workshop out behind the house. But it would do for what he had in mind. With sword and gun in hand, he went in search of his wife. The upper floor held two guest rooms separated by a guest bath, all of which were empty. And there, at the end of the hall, the master bedroom that Cade had turned into Gabby's sanctuary. The lock had been blasted away with a bolt of arcane power. The door smashed inward like the entrance to the home.
Gabrielle?
He stepped to the door and then inside the room. As he stepped into the master bedroom, he sensed movement coming from his left and he spun in that direction, dropping to one knee to get out of the line of attack. The move saved his life, for the specter that had been about to try to take his head only managed to rake his back as it passed overhead. Because of their wraith-like form, guns were useless against specters. Knowing this, Cade dropped his pistol on the floor and rose with his sword extended, ready for battle. There were four of them, and they closed in a rush. Cade fought like a demon himself, directing every ounce of his anger down through the weapon at his attackers. All the fury and frustration he felt, all his fear and worry over Gabrielle's fate, was funneled into his blows now that he had a target. His sword spun like a dervish, striking with deadly accuracy, and soon there were two where there had been four. The specters swarmed around him, striving to slip past his defenses, to gain the opportunity to sink their fangs into his flesh or rake him with their claws. And each time, they were met with the keen edge of Cade's blade. The battle was over, it seemed, at least for the moment. Cade was standing in the middle of the room, blood dripping from the claw marks across his shoulder and back. He spun around, the sword in his hands coming up automatically before he had even processed the sound and understood what it was. He felt compelled to answer it.
Hello, Knight Commander. I see it didn't take you long to deal with my little pets.
Cade clenched his teeth together to keep from screaming in rage at the sound of the necromancer's voice.
What have you done with her?
Always to the point. It is one of the things I like about you, Knight Commander. Your wife is quite safe, I assure you.
What do you want?
What do I want? Why, your help, of course, Knight Commander. In exchange for the health and well-being of
your wife.
I'm listening.
Riley stood where he was and waited for the preceptor and his entourage to reach him. It was a minor breach of etiquette, but made Riley feel good nonetheless. It wasn't lost on the preceptor either, apparently, for Johansson frowned as he stopped in front of him.
Preceptor, I wasn't...
Expecting me? Of course you weren't. Did we get him?
The him was, presumably, the necromancer, and Riley resisted the urge to remark that they wouldn't all be standing around with their thumbs in their asses if they had caught him.
No, sir. He was already gone when we arrived.
Preceptor Johansson glanced back. Riley would have sworn his frown had gotten deeper.
Gone? Gone where?
That's what we're trying to ascertain, sir.
I see.
Riley gritted his teeth to keep from reacting. He knew a reaction was just what the man wanted, and he refused to give him the satisfaction. They passed the guard stationed at the door and entered the warehouse.
This way, sir.
Riley stepped around the preceptor and led him down the aisle between the shipping containers. When they reached the area at the back of the warehouse where the ritual had taken place, Riley stepped aside, giving the other man a clear view of the scene. Unlike most of the other men in the room, the preceptor had never served in the field, and Riley took some minor satisfaction in watching the man struggle with his facial expression as his stomach no doubt threatened to revolt. It was petty, he knew, but satisfying nonetheless. He really didn't like this man.
What was the point? What was he trying to accomplish?
It was an excellent question, and one for which Riley wished he had an answer. Unfortunately, the person who might have some insight into the issue had just stolen his SUV and raced off into the night.
It's clearly a ceremonial ritual.
Riley spent the next few minutes filling in the preceptor on what they had discovered since their arrival. It was thin, and he knew it, but there wasn't much he could do about that right now. He needed to get a team of technicians in here to examine the scene. Perhaps they'd learn more once the forensic squad had had a chance to process the place. And, of course, there was whatever Cade had seen. Hennessy, the preceptor's aide, stepped over to him and cupped a hand to his ear. The preceptor nodded and then looked back at Riley, a surprised expression on his face.
Am I correct in understanding that Knight Commander Williams is here?
Riley's hesitation was barely a fraction of a second long as he weighed his options. His instinct screamed at him to deny Cade's presence, especially after the way his former commander had charged out of here. But the simple fact that Johansson had asked after the man showed he already knew the answer to his own question. There was nothing to be gained by lying.
Was here, sir. He left a few moments before you arrived.
I see. And where was Commander Williams going?
He didn't say, sir.
And you don't find that interesting, Captain?
No, sir. Knight Commander Williams has always been free to come and go at his own discretion.
Tell me, Captain, have you seen the paperwork ordering the Necromancer be moved to Longfort?
I have. The order was legitimate. It originated in the Adjutant General's office and was the direct result of the findings at trial the week before. Logan was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. The order to remand him to Longfort was simply to allow him to carry out a sentence.
So you don't believe that any of our people were involved?
Our people? I don't see how that's even possible. Logan has been kept in isolation for months with barely an opportunity to speak to anyone. He has three sets of guards permanently attached to him, all veterans with impeccable records. There was nothing the Necromancer could have offered that would have interested them in any way. And without families, he couldn't threaten their loved ones in order to force cooperation either.
And yet, it is these same guards that have disappeared?
We suspect that they're dead, Preceptor, not running around helping our enemy. Especially one as foul as the Necromancer. I'd swear on my mother's grave that they had nothing to do with the escape.
The Preceptor watched him closely for a moment, making Riley wonder just what the hell he had missed. The transport crew were on the up and up. He'd bet his life on it. Johansson reached back toward his aide. The other man reached inside the leather attaché case he carried and withdrew a single sheet of paper, which he then passed to the Preceptor. The Preceptor, in turn, handed it to Riley.
What's this?
Read it.
Riley did so. It was an order remanding the Necromancer into the custody of the warden at the Longfort Containment Facility. He scanned the document, noting that it seemed to be properly prepared and executed.
I don't see what this...
His gaze fell on the last line of the document. The order was dated 3 months earlier, just prior to the order's attack on the Changshi stronghold in the Beyond. More importantly, however, was the fact that it was signed by Cade Williams. The Preceptor reached out and took the paperwork out of Riley's hands.
Given the prior history between these two individuals, I think it prudent that we ask Knight Commander Williams to explain himself. I'm ordering you to locate the Knight Commander and to bring him in for questioning in this matter. The sooner, the better.
Are you suggesting that Commander Williams was somehow involved in the Necromancer's escape?
We won't really know until we speak to him, now will we?
Bullshit.
Cade risked life and limb to personally apprehend the Necromancer just a few short months before. Why on earth would he do that, only to turn around and help him escape again? Doing so made absolutely no sense.
I want the Necromancer found, Knight Captain, and found quickly. If that means bringing Commander Williams in for questioning, then so be it. Pull out all the stops, do whatever you have to do, but get this man back into custody. We've never had an escape of this magnitude before, and I'll be damned if I'm gonna go down in history books as the man who let this bastard loose. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir. Crystal clear. You're more worried about your reputation than the innocent lives that are going to be impacted by this man's escape, and you'll throw Cade to the wolves in the process if that's what it takes to make you look better.
I will expect regular updates and wish to speak to Commander Williams myself when you return to the commandery.
Then, having issued the orders that Riley was certain were his true purpose for being here, the Preceptor turned on his heel without another word and headed for the exit, his aides following behind him.
Good riddance.
The crime scene unit came hustling in right in the wake of the Preceptor's departure, and for the next 20 minutes, Riley had his hands full directing their efforts in processing the scene. Their work was well underway by the time he found a moment to follow up on his other pressing concern. All the Templar vehicles, be they for land, sea, or sky, were outfitted with electronic tracking devices to allow the Order to best support their personnel in the field. The SUV Cade had decided to take for a joyride had one as well, and it was a relatively simple matter to corner Kepler, one of the crime scene unit's tech specialists, and ask him to run a trace on the vehicle.
Do you want to know where it is now or where it's been?
You can do that? Track where the vehicle has been?
You make it sound like rocket science, but it's really just a matter of tracking the cell towers that the tracker uses to ping its location, and then building a trail from there. The towers purge the data nightly, so as long as we're not tracing a route that's more than 24 hours old, we'll be just fine. Give me 15 minutes.
It took less than 10. Before he knew it, Riley was staring at a satellite map displayed on the screen of Kepler's laptop, watching a reconstruction of the route the SUV had taken after roaring out of the parking lot of the warehouse complex. The vehicle had wound its way through the city streets until it reached Interstate 95. From there, it had headed southwest for several exits before getting off on one of the county roads leading north. A few short minutes after that, the vehicle arrived at its destination.
841 Didymus Lane. Damn, your boy was moving fast.
It was an address Riley knew well. He'd been teasing his friend about living on a street named after Doubting Thomas for several years now.
How can you tell?
Look here. These are the times that the transponder in the car binged the cell tower. These numbers here give the distance between towers. Now, I'm no math genius, but off the top of my head, I'd say your boy was pushing a C note headed down I-95.
Why had Cade needed to get home so fast? Riley didn't know, but he intended to find out.